Many of you know that Unitarian Universalism is a non-creedal spiritual tradition, or what's called a free faith. This means it doesn't insist that everyone profess a certain set of fixed beliefs. Instead, we come together to explore, wonder, consider, discover, and deepen. In the spirit of free inquiry, I'm enormously grateful that one of UUism's professed sources of guidance is, quote, humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. I love that. Not least because the secular humanism is a vital corrective to the idolatrous dogma and make-believe common in conventional religions. Yet, because UUism was understandably eager to distance itself from such delusions, when it thankfully threw out the bathwater of religious fantasies and superstition, like modern rationalism in general, it also largely threw out the baby of our spiritual essence, the human soul. We've begun to reclaim it some, which to me is vital, for as I'll likely expand on some other day, in my view, the wholesale modernist rejection of this essence has had profoundly detrimental consequences on many levels. But for today, in considering one of the perennial spiritual questions, what happens to human beings after physical death, I will purposely challenge the satirical portrait of you used at their funerals as being all dressed up with no place to go. Because after years of exploration and deliberation, I have come to trust firmly in the reality of the human soul and its continuity after death. Not through theological conjecture or philosophical argument, but through countless experience-based stories. Many of these, like the two we heard previously and others to come, expressed by folks with no religious or spiritual beliefs, who experienced or witnessed happenings that point strongly toward an afterlife. Being open to these stories suggests means allowing for aspects of life that transcend the strictly rational and material and empirical. That is, placing the rational mind within a broader transrational sphere of awareness. And science itself doesn't preclude such a sphere. For instance, most cosmologists now believe the known universe is about 5% normal matter, the stuff we can sense directly, with the rest being made up of unseen dark matter and dark energy. Thus, I suggest it serves our intellectual and spiritual expansion to remain open-minded about the nature of ultimate reality. And before we dive in further, a quick aside. Sometimes when I share something, like among these stories, I find myself tearing up a little bit. Having reflected on why, I feel it's because some deep truth is being conveyed and the tuning fork of my heart and soul resonates with it. Now, I could be wrong. It could just be that I'm resonating with something that I wish were true, but I don't think so. I say this now because one of the stories in particular, part of it tends to hit me this way, so whether then or another day, if it happens, please know I'm okay, I'm just moved, and I will continue eventually. So, up to now we've heard two afterlife intimation stories, one from the book Final Gifts, Understanding the Special Awareness Needs and Communications of the Dying. A few years ago, after a lifelong friend's older brother, who I also knew, died suddenly, I emailed that and two other final gift stories to my bereaved pal. He didn't respond, and that was fine. I knew that he and his whole family were stricken and shaken by the unexpected death and caught up with all the emotional and practical demands of responding to the situation. I also knew that while he and I met as kids at a Lutheran church in Minneapolis, as an adult, he had never had any interest in spiritual matters. About 10 months pass, during which time his elderly father's health is declining. I had known his dad forever, and every few weeks my friend and I talk about dealing with his decline. Then one day I get a different kind of phone call from my buddy, and I later ask if he could write down the essence of the experience he shared with me. He was happy to. These are his words. I went to see my father, and the hospice nurse was there. She told me that my dad was comfortable but was seeing people on the other side. He may not have much time left. I asked what she meant by people on the other side, and she said he is calling out people's names, but she couldn't clearly understand who he was calling to. I told her, in a smart-alecky tone, that when you know someone who has been to the other side and saw people from their past and lived to tell you about it, you let me know. I was a non-believer of the other side. So I walked to the bed and looked at Dad, and with his eyes closed, he asked, "How many people are here?" I looked at him and said, "There are only three of us here." He said, "There are so many people here. How did you all get here? I haven't seen you in such a long time." A huge smile came across his face, and he had not smiled in such a long time. It blew me away. He repeats, "How did you get here?" I'm freaking out because he was not talking to me. I started to cry and told the hospice nurse I was sorry for breaking down, and she said, "It's okay. I told you he was seeing people on the other side." I think there is something to the progression of death, and the hospice people have seen it many times before. I guess I had to see it for myself to come to grips with the fact that there really could be another side. Wow, what an experience. When I told my brother what happened, he said that he wished that he could have been there to witness it. I'll reiterate, wow, what an experience. Of course, it's possible to argue, and many do, that the blissful visions experienced by dying people like Lynn in our reading and my friend's father are just hallucinations produced as their brains shut down. But such visions don't only come to dying persons, but also to those very much alive and of sound mind. For instance, another acquaintance of mine, a spiritual yet also scientific one, he's an airline pilot, was awakened in the middle of the night by his father standing at the foot of his bed. At that moment, his phone rang, and it was his sister, 1,000 miles away, who said she was looking at their father standing at the foot of her bed. The apparition faded. They both finally fell back to sleep. And in the morning, neither was surprised to learn that their elderly dad had died at exactly the time he appeared to them. We might repeat, wow, what an experience. Something we could also apply to another account, this from a member of a different UU congregation I served. I got permission to share what she wrote to me, but have withheld some details for privacy. Here are her words, slightly abridged. "When I was about 25, one of my best friends was murdered. She was the naturalist at a national park in California, whose attacker had previously killed three other women. She fought so hard that she had his DNA under her fingernail so he could be identified, which solved the other murders. Her loss was very shocking and horrific for me, as it was for everyone who loved her. I was in a lot of pain, and it was particularly terrible to think of what she went through in the moments before her death. I believe it was a week or so after her death that I was asleep one night and woke up to feel I had had a visitation. She had put her hand on my shoulder, and I was just so thankful to have contact with this person I thought I'd lost forever and wanted to share my sympathies with her for what she'd been through. I didn't hear any words from her, but she communicated that she was in a hurry. She was going back and forth from her mother, who was on the coast, and her fiancé, who was up in the Sierra. I was in Davis, and she saw how much pain I was in, so she wanted to come by quickly to comfort me. She wasn't in pain and had no personal upset from what she had gone through. She was desperate to get to her fiancé, who was tearing his heart out, but aside from trying to ease the suffering of those of us who loved her, she wasn't suffering herself. She could see through us the rage and the trauma, but she wasn't feeling any of it. She was calm and loving and whole. I hadn't believed in angels, before this or had any specific idea of what happened to a person's soul after death, or even if they had one. This visit from her was very calming for me. It was still torturous to think of what she'd gone through, and so saddening that she didn't get to live the full life that she deserved. But I now felt that I knew she at least wasn't reliving the pain. She wasn't hurting. Her soul wasn't wounded and whimpering, sad to have lost its days on earth. Her soul was full of strength and peace and love, and also of compassion for those she'd left behind. She left, and that's when I woke up, and the feeling of her hand having just been on my shoulder was still there. It is strange to write this story down, she concludes, but maybe it will help somebody else find comfort if they are grieving someone who has died in a physically painful way. Again, wow, what an experience. And if you are grieving a loss, and especially if you lost a loved one in a particularly distressing way, please know that the peaceful, loving soul this person reported encountering is the state of your loved one too, as it will be for all of us. Because all these stories support universalist theology, the claim that despite even severe earthly mistakes, all souls are ultimately reconciled with the divine. Everyone reaches the light. No report I have ever encountered tells of a person's spirit warning their loved ones about eternal hell and damnation, nor saying they'd better take Jesus as their Lord and Savior or else suffer that fate. Yet the trust that one's spiritual essence continues after physical death and the ultimate assurance of peace for all souls is not to suggest we should mourn our lost loved ones any less. Grieving is a crucial process that helps the human psyche adjust to the sting of death. Still, is it possible that this assurance can ease that sting a bit and also allow us to view our own mortality with less trepidation? One of history's great mystical poets, Rumi, responds with a resounding yes. When you see my procession, don't cry, gone, gone. For me, it is a time of meeting and reunion. As you lower me into the grave, don't say, so long. The grave is a veil before the gathering of paradise. When you see that lowering down, consider a rising. What harm is there in the setting of a sun or moon? What seems a setting to you is a dawning. Recall that complete trust in this dawning came upon Vicki Hamilton during her near-death experience in a car accident where she, quote, knew with absolute certainty that my body and soul are two separate entities. The soul goes on. Where it goes, I'm not certain, but I know it's somewhere good. And we can realize this without it being attached to any notion of God whatsoever, nor to formulaic characterizations of heaven. We can just understand that humans have a spiritual more at our core, that Rumi's time of meeting and reunion is real, and simply let the larger mystery be. In closing, here's another story from Final Gifts I sent my friend after his brother died that affirms this sacred reunion of our souls. Peggy, a young woman dying of lymphoma that had advanced to the point where she was very weak, slept most of the time and was sometimes slightly confused. But when her colleague arrived for a routine visit, Peggy called out in a strong, clear voice. "Come on up, I'm upstairs," she said. She looked bright, radiant, and was unusually animated. Let me tell you what happened to me, Peggy said. I was lying here in bed yesterday, sort of drifting in and out of sleep, and remembering back to a happy time in my childhood. My brother and I were taken in by my aunt during a time that my parents were having financial difficulty. I really loved my aunt. She was so loving to both of us, and it was just a very happy time for me. I still love her a lot. Well, I woke up with a start when I felt a warm, caring hand on my shoulder. I looked behind me, and there was my aunt smiling at me as she touched me. It made me feel so good and safe. "Where is your aunt?" the nurse asked. "She lives in Massachusetts," Peggy said. "I haven't seen her in such a long time because she's sick, but I felt her with me off and on all day. It made me feel so good. Then last night, my uncle called to say she died yesterday, at the same time I was first aware of her being with me. Then today I woke up and she was touching me again." "What a nice experience," the nurse said. "I can see how good it's made you feel. What do you think it means?" "That she'll be there for me when I die," Peggy replied with a luminous smile, "and that we will be together again. Namaste and blessed be."